following podcast is hashtag Boone approved. It's time for another edition of the Boone Podcast.
If I get three pairs of shoes from a collective 14 gifts, I'm good.
On today's program, we flip the script on Booney.
With 141, his second home run in as many nights and his 37th of the year.
Today, we stick him under the lights and shove a mic in his face.
And I mean, we're flying through these tree-lined trails going 1,000 miles an hour.
He is CBS Sports Radio host and the executive producer of the Boone Podcast, Rich Herrera.
I want to know about you guys. What was like growing up around your dad while he was playing when you guys were younger?
Now, in its fourth year, this is the one and only Brett Boone Podcast.
Hello again, everybody, and welcome to Turning Two with Booney. I'm Rich Herrera, along with Brett Boone. Couple days, weeks, I don't know, when are we, 10 days after the World Series? Let's check in with Brett Boone, see what's going on. Booney, hello.
Hello, Rich. I was sitting here curiously wondering
why I was late.
You were late. That's all right.
Flat tire. Flat tire. The tread came completely off the tire.
No, I was wondering. What a morning. I haven't talked to you, and sometimes I have an idea what we're going to speak of, but today I'm thinking, I wonder what Rich has in store for the podcast. Because this is kind of, the Fridays are kind of your day. You run the show. You have the questions. I'm interested. I'm curious. Well, I'm about to find out, I think.
We're going to talk about the World Series, post-World Series players, off-season plans, what you work on. We're going to talk about Juan Soto. I'm going to ask you, have you ever shoved a reporter? I'm going to ask you about when you go play in your old ballpark and the fans give you the business. What do you think? And then I'm going to ask you about the Mount Rushmore fast food that Brett Boone won't eat.
Okay.
Like, I don't know if they have this in San Diego. They have a chicken Big Mac.
Chicken.
Like a McDonald's chicken, you know, the chicken, really? McDonald's chicken sandwich, the deep fried bread and fried chicken sandwich.
Right.
But instead of having hamburger patties, do you remember the McDonald's jingle for the Big Mac? Two all beef patty, special sauce, lettuce, cheese,
pickles,
onion, and a sesame seed bun.
Yeah,
that's advertising right there, folks. So instead of having the hamburger patties, they have
chicken. Better alternative.
Deep fried though?
No.
So that's one thing that would probably be on the Mount Rushmore things that Brett would love to eat, but he won't.
Oh, I've got a ton of them.
All right, we'll start with that. That was going to be the kicker at the end of the podcast, but let's just start with that right now.
Well, first of all, I've eaten everything. I'm a foodie at heart. I mean, if there were no consequences for food, I probably like everything you like. I probably like everything every red-blooded American likes. If there were no consequences and it didn't matter, I would eat pizza. McDonald's. See, everybody is out there thinking, oh, well, I will, you know, I'll do fast food once in a while. I'll maybe go to In-N-Out, but I won't do McDonald's. Like, that's beneath me. I'll tell you what, McDonald's is some of the best tasting stuff for being like, just McDonald's. Oh, right. Yeah. What are you going to go to McDonald's when there's In-N-Out Burger down the street? Well, In-N-Out Burger is great. Don't get me wrong. But have you ever just nestled up with a basic quarter pounder with cheese?
Yes.
It's unbelievable how good they are. Unbelievable. That being said, I'm one of those guys.
I need four things. I need four things that Brett would love to eat.
But I've eaten everything. Okay. Love to eat, but I avoid
just
it.
Don't. Yeah. Because, you know, a moment on the lips is 10 pounds on the hips.
Let me think, man. I know. Like I said, I'm a foodie. I'm down like 75 pounds.
Look how good you look.
What do I love more than life itself?
Yes.
I mean, my go-to, but I eat it, so this doesn't count. I love a good old fashioned, just huge bowl of spaghetti, but I eat that once in a great while, so that doesn't count on the list. Okay.
Right. No, but this is fast food.
Fast food that I won't eat.
But you'd love to if you could. If you didn't care, you would go for it.
Cane's chicken with the sauce.
Yes. Raising Cane's.
Right. With all the bread and all the fries. I won't eat it.
Double fries, no coleslaw.
And it's tremendous.
It's tremendous.
Animal style everything.
In-N-Out?
In-N-Out. I've never ordered it one time, but I see people order it, and I'm kind of envious.
I'll have animal fries.
I don't.
I'll do animal fries.
You want me to give you the basic? One of my favorite foods maybe in life.
Well, yeah, but but give me my Mount Rushmore first, because this makes you think. So In-N-Out, I get the
I will never get the animal fries ever. I'll get the animal fries.
Go ahead. And then Brett, on top of that, I'll get an extra patty with cheese, and I'll cut it up and put it on top. It'll be roadkill.
Makes you a glutton.
Stuff that you'll never have, that you're not, you know, capable of enjoying.
No, that's like, I'm not only going to do this, but I'm going to rub it in your face.
Yeah. I'm spiking the football.
Let's see. Other fast food.
So we have Raising Cane's. Delicious. In-N-Out.
Really, really good.
Delicious.
Oh, I eat In-N-Out, though. I eat it all the time. I just want the animal style.
Right. You have a double-double or a single?
Oh, I'll have double-double, but okay. I'll do it. I'll
protein style.
I'll try to make myself feel good. And by the way, protein style just quite doesn't do the double-double justice, but I get away with it. This isn't fast food, but it's my favorite food of all time. I know. I won't even go there. Let's see. We got
Del Taco. It has to be fast food. There's Del Taco. There's Jack in the Box.
I will never get a burger at Del Taco.
Oh.
You know why?
Because the burgers are so good.
The burgers are really good, but if I'm going to have a burger, I'm going to have an In-N-Out burger, or I'm going to have a quarter pounder, double quarter pounder with cheese. So I won't have it. Now, there's a place that you guys have. And I believe they're in Arizona and they're in Texas. And I think it is better than the double-double burger.
Does it start with a W?
Yes.
Whataburger.
I think if I'm in Texas or Arizona,
yeah,
I will stop.
Louisiana.
I will get a Whataburger.
Yeah. Double meat, double cheese.
I will not do it protein style. I used to do it in Texas when I was playing.
Right. Double meat, double cheese.
Midnight, I'd go there. Whataburger is the biggest kept secret in the world. So I really don't have, I guess the Mount Rushmore thing's falling a little flat here.
But you're a real person. You're not a AI robot.
No, but I'm falling a little flat here because I'm not giving you four solid. Absolutely, I will not.
Anyway. Raising Cane's is solid. In-N-Out is solid. Whataburger is solid. And what'd you say, Del Taco?
Del Taco. I used to get the, when I was a kid, I used to get the egg and bean burritos.
Yeah.
And it was kind of off the menu, and it was more of a Noggles. Noggles was an affiliate of Del Taco.
No, Noggles. Noggles was a general manager, worked at Del Taco, left, took the recipes with them, and opened up his own Noggles. And they're very Southern California, and they are the best.
They are the best. Here's the best food of all time that I never, ever, ever, ever eat anymore. I would, if I could do anything I wanted today,
okay.
I would go to the grocery store. I'd get three Swanson's pot pies, the little round one,
Yeah.
Flip them over, bake them, salt, pepper. It's my favorite food on earth. I probably haven't had a pot pie in 20 years.
Would Sue Boone make those?
Yes, that's where I got them, and they're always the Swans. Everybody wants to get cute and go, oh no, the Marie Callender's.
I'll have the quiche.
This is this. No, that basic junk Swanson's. They're 99 cents at the. I don't know if they're 99 cents anymore, but
no, that's inflation, Brett.
Yeah.
Though those are four outstanding ones. If you guys want to comment, you can. And by the way, I'll still let you be part of our survey. We haven't talked about this in a while. If put this on camera, those of you watching on YouTube.
Oh, by the way, for the people, I sent out, I don't know, 20-something envelopes a couple days ago. So those
they
of you, I'm a little slow getting to you. You sent me your address. You got a card and one of these.
A Boone Podcast. By the way, show us where you use
gorgeous stickers.
Yes, yes. I called them a decal, so they seem to be worth more.
I so much want to go in and go to restrooms at fast food places and stick one of those on the wall. But then I think, man, did I use my credit card? Do they know I was here? And they know I did that.
Well, I'll do it then.
Yeah, go ahead.
I do that.
And that's for me, I'm like, I don't know what he's doing. I would never do something like that.
Yeah, it's Herrera. He's that clown. So right. If you want to take our survey, send us an email, BrettBoone10@yahoo.com. BrettBoone10@yahoo.com. Send us this and send us an email. We'll answer. We'll ask you to fill out our survey, excuse me, and then we'll send you a decal and an autographed Brett Boone baseball card. It helps us quite a bit with this podcast. All right. Oh, by the way, if you took the survey and we sent you one, send me an email. Use the same email address. Send me an email of where you used the decal, and we'll put it out on social media. How's that, Brett?
You got it.
Okay. We did the Mount Rushmore. Let's talk about the World Series now that it's over. All the aftermath. We got a bunch of play. People agreed with our thought that the Dodgers could just get better. And they're going to be better next year. They're the team to beat going out as we get into the offseason. What happens now for players? Now the postseason's over. If you didn't make the postseason, you've had a month off. Mm-hmm. Time to get back to work.
Yeah, those players that didn't make the postseason, they're probably back in. They're back training right now.
Grinding.
The ones that the Yankees and the Dodgers were the last two standing, they're probably taking a little time right now, probably going on a little vacation.
Right.
Taking a week off. But today's game, you know, these guys are training around the clock. These guys are 24/7. They might take a week off. And I'm not saying get back to baseball activities. I don't think guys are hitting now that hit in the World Series. But as far as your gym and, you know, you're getting back on your training and your diet and all that stuff, that starts probably next week for the World Series teams, and probably in full force for the guys that didn't make the postseason. You know, what I used to do is I'd take a couple weeks, do what I want, and then get back.
Go to Del Taco and Noggles.
Right. And then get back in the gym, get my diet tightened up. And then by the time I never, as a veteran player, unless I had a swing change to make, and there were a couple off seasons where I was going to overhaul what I was doing. It might be going from a closed stance to an open stance, my hands in one place. Now I'm going to put my hands in a different place and I liken it to golf a little bit. You'll hear about swing changes in golf all the time. Well, in baseball, you can't do it mid season. You know, when things are going bad, you got to find a way to survive. And that's something for the offseason. Big leagues, it's too good. It's too fast to just make changes, big swinging changes
during the middle of the season.
Mid-season. So you need that offseason. And I had two offseasons that I can remember. One was earlier in my career. One was later in my career, where the season ended in September, end of September. I was in the cage at the latest, I think by the middle of October, and I hit really? And had to do that change all winter and company that with the gym training and all that, add the baseball aspect to it because I had to do that. But in a normal year, when I wasn't making any major adjustments, I would train, get as strong as I could get to January. And January is where I would pick up a bat, start throwing, meet my buddies at the field. We'd start taking ground balls as we got closer to February and get ready for that mid-February report date. And that was just my particular way I went about it. I didn't want to see it. Most offseason, I didn't want to see a glove, a ball, a bat for at least a couple months getting into the swing of things in the winter.
Okay, so here's a big question. Who decides Brett Boone is going to remake his swing? So if I had a bad season, I want to redo my hack. Who decides? Well, how do you let the club know? How do you communicate?
I don't let anybody know. Usually the two times I had to do it, the numbers were coming back weren't in my favor, and it was obvious to me. And usually it was my father. Uh-huh. Usually my dad, we'd be talking throughout the season. I remember in 1997, it was like, Dad, this isn't working. You know, we got to fix some things. And I changed it. And the only other time I did it was between 2000 and 2001, where I did some things. And that wasn't a major one. The biggest one was after the 97 season. I really went from, I had, if you go back and you look at my stance in 1996, 94, 95, my stance was completely different than my 98 stance. And it was kind of crouched, low, closed right. stance, almost a Giancarlo Stanton closed stance. And I went to completely open, shoulders level.
Okay, so
in a completely different spot, and that takes time.
Let me ask you this then, Brett. Who decided that you were going to open it up? Who decided you were going to stand up a little bit more?
Well, it just made sense. You know, I started to look at great hitters, most great hitters, especially right-handed hitters, and you don't pay attention to left-handed hitters. That's different. They're in a different world.
Right.
It's right-handed hitters, guys that you consider somewhat like you,
okay,
style-wise. And I started to notice most of the great right-handed hitters were slightly open, and that gives you double vision with, okay, if you're closed, you're really cutting out that back eye, which for a right-hander is your right eye, and you're really not. When you're open, you're able to look at the pitcher with two eyes, which can improve your vision, obviously. That's why most great right-handed hitters are, these days especially, because the spin rates and the velocity is more than it was 20 years ago. I watched Giancarlo Stanton, and I'm amazed at how he can do it and how he's, you know, borderline on a Hall of Fame track. I don't know how he does it with the closed stance in today's game with the level of velocity that there is, but there are exceptions to the rule. Most great right-hand hitters, you're going to see slightly open to get both those eyes on the pitcher.
Okay, but again, I think this is fascinating. Brett, you don't give yourself your own haircut, do you? You don't cut your own hair, do you?
Sometimes.
No.
Well, I get a haircut and then I trim on top of the trim.
Okay. Do you, it's physician heal thyself. How do you know what you want to do without having someone else's input? I mean, if I need input. Surgery, I'm not going to do it myself. I'm going to have somebody else do it. I've never cut my own hair, Brett.
I know, but
I don't make my own clothes.
Baseball's different.
That's what I want to know. So the feedback that you get, did you watch film? Were you, because you're going to hear a lot of guys, oh yeah, I went and read.
Like I said, I watched great hitters that I kind of thought.
Do you talk it through with somebody?
Our skill set was similar. Does that make sense? And then I'd go to people I trust.
Okay, that's where I'm going.
My father.
Okay.
And you know, I know Bob Boone and had an awesome career, but was not known for his power or offensive prowess.
Correct.
Bob Boone was known as kind of a
great
warrior
and
a great defensive catcher and somebody that really held pitching staffs together.
And that's why his gold glove is behind you.
But I'll tell you what he's got though. He's got real vision and he's smart when it comes to hitting. Some of the great hitters of the game are no help to you.
Right. Because it's so easy for them.
Correct. And I find that the guys that really,
because they had to work
at it, had to try everything.
Yeah.
They usually have some pretty good insight and from a real humble spot, because they appreciate how hard hitting is. And my dad, for me, for some reason, as a kid, now that was father, son, it was, no, get out of here, dad. I don't want to talk to my dad about this. But as you grow up and you mature and you have a professional mindset, I was very open to my dad's input, and we still had the father-son relationship where we debate and we get on each other's nerves. But when it came to professional on the field, changing my swing, my dad had an uncanny ability to switch off the father-son and really be a coach-player relationship. I really appreciated that. And throughout my career, it really helped me a lot.
Okay. Two questions then. Was that because he was a catcher and he knew how to throw off people's timing? So his job was to disrupt timing. So if I know how to attack you, it's kind of like hiring a hacker to put a firewall up in your network.
No, I don't think so, because I used to think like that as a hitter as well. I could think through any scenario, and I thought with the catcher, I thought with the pitcher, I thought about body language and what am I giving away? What is he giving away? And dad was great. He was great at setting up hitters, but it wasn't about the setup. My dad was strictly, okay, my mental approach to hitting changed over the years. And Edgar Martinez, and I've talked about this a lot, was a big mentor of mine. The thought process, not the physical. There's two things in baseball. There's the physical, there's the thought process. The physical, not too many people can help you with. And that's why I laugh every offseason.
The physical part.
Right. During the season, if teams aren't hitting, oh, they need to fire the hitting coach. Do you realize the hitting coach has nothing to do with it? He's a psychiatrist, but we're going to play
this game. He's a babysitter.
Right, exactly.
He's a crisis manager.
There's two things. There's the physical, which is very tough to fix. Very people, you're lucky if you meet one or two throughout your journey in professional baseball and amateur baseball that can really help you with the physical. The mental is something that through the years I pieced together and came up with my mental way of doing things, how to prepare for 162 games, one game at a time, one at bat at a time. And when I learned to do that, I felt some days I win, some days I lose. Some days my approach was right, some days it wasn't. But I found that consistency over 162, I could be the best player I could be. It wasn't what everybody else could be, what I could be. That's the mental side. That became the easy part for me because I had an approach. I had a thought process. I had checkpoints. And when I left that on deck circle, I had a plan and I was going to execute my plan. And like I said, some days I was going to be outsmarted. Some days I was going to lose. But for the most part, it was the most consistent way for me to hit. Now you go to the physical. That's a completely different animal. You got to find through your journey in pro baseball, you've got to find that guy that can point something out, and it may be with your hands or your stance or your setup. Well,
they were talking about. They were talking
Dad
about.
Dad was one of those guys for me.
They were talking during the World Series with Judge that he was getting his front foot down too late.
Sure, that's part of what happens, and you don't recognize pitches. It's amazing. Because
you're not set. Okay. You got to get your foot up sooner to get it back down in time.
Right. When you're swinging good and when you're on time and when all the mechanisms are working in sync and when you're getting your foot down and it seems like you're seeing breaking ball out of the hand and you just have a soft spit on it take, you know, a good slider off the plate when you just see it out of his hand. Because you it know. Seems like everything's in slow motion. The pitcher's going to look at you like, wow, that was a good pitch. How'd you lay off it? You didn't even flinch at that. Now, when things are going bad, oh, you're flinching at everything.
You're 90 jelly legs.
90 looks like 95. 95 looks like 100. And it's quite the reverse when you're locked in and your physical swing's in really good shape and all your checkpoints are hitting. 100 miles an hour looks like 90. It's like, man, it looks like it's almost in slow motion coming in because I'm so physically on time with my mechanics.
And that's when you get out in front and get extension, right?
That's I don't know if that's actually the terminology. That's why baseball's so hard. When you're on time, everything's going good, and it's so hard to get all the mechanics going perfectly. But when they are, it seems like for a minute, an instant in time, wow, hitting's really easy, and I can't wait to get to the plate. But defense, Rich, throughout my career, defense at the beginning was a little bit of a challenge for me.
Okay.
Then I worked my butt off, and defense became really easy. I didn't have to work in the offseason. I did my basic stuff because I had repeated it so many times. My footwork was as good as it could be. The glove work was easy. And defense, I didn't have to think. I didn't have to worry about it. It was actually a safe place for me when the hitting wasn't there. It's like, man, I'm gonna go out and take a hit away from somebody and win a game with my glove because I can. And it's much simpler for me than hitting. Even in my best years, when it seemed like I was locked in more than I wasn't, man, hitting was still so hard for me. It's like it's so hard to keep up in the maintenance and just keeping yourself in that somewhat zone. You're not going to be in the zone all year, but if you can just be in that at least 50-50 where I got a chance every night, it's really, at least for me, really was difficult. And it made me over time appreciate the great years because I know how hard they are to have because I've been at the other end too, when I had some really tough years. So there was a little bit of a, wow, this is pretty cool because I know how tough it is. And I've been down there. So when I'm up here, don't get too excited with yourself because you know, you could be down there again, if that makes sense.
Okay, I've never asked you this question. I've never asked anybody this question, but I'm going to ask you, what is it like when you miss a pitch? There's times where we see someone where they're just way out in front, or somebody just throws a nasty slider and it is 6 inches off the plate and you're just flailing at it. What goes through your mind? Because I see that look on the face like, oh, I can't stop.
It depends. If it gets to a point where it's a vision thing and you're not seeing the pitch, probably because something mechanically is wrong, you're not getting your foot down, something like that. First thing that people...
But in that moment, that moment I'm watching TV, they slow down and you just see the guy
almost,
his hands are out there, his mouth is open. He's like, ah.
If it's an isolated incident, it happens. It's baseball. Let's get back to this next pitch. If it's something that right now I can't see the pitch and I'm not picking up spin, I would say anxiousness.
Okay.
A little bit of anxiety. A little bit, I mean, as uncertain as I could possibly be, scary, because my biggest fear as a hitter was embarrassing myself. And when you're not picking up slider and you're swinging at a pitch a foot off the plate, the toughest part of hitting is a pitcher throwing me a slider, me missing it by a foot, getting back in the box confidently ready for the next pitch. Usually when you're chasing pitches like that, your mindset is survive. Do not be humiliated. I see this all the time. Let's say when you're striking out quite a bit, let's say you had a hat trick in a game, you struck out three times. That's when I would be most anxious. Like, whatever you do, do not strike out a fourth time. Because I'm going to be twitching tonight in the hotel room. Like, I'm going to be seeing shadows. I can't make contact. I can't. So I'll tell you, and I see it with players now, that fourth at bat, if I popped up to the catcher, outwardly I'd be like showing a little bit of disgust, like, damn it, I missed that pitch. Inwardly, I'm having a party saying, I didn't strike out.
Right.
Seriously.
You're not getting the sombrero.
And players, guys, when we retire, buddies of mine, they understand exactly what I'm talking about. Like, they can admit that they've been there, because you strike out three times in a row, I'm telling you, you're starting to see things that aren't there. You're going crazy. It's you talk about insecurity,
right? When
you get up that fourth bat, I get up there and I'd roll over a slider into a double play and try to act like I'm so disappointed that I hit into a double play, when inside I'm going, I made contact. There's times where you will die to hit into a double play. Like, you would love it. Please let me hit into a double play, because it's not a strikeout. I'm telling you, I've been there, and it is a bad feeling. Outwardly, people expect us to be a certain way. They expected me, with my personality and my shtick I had going,
right,
well, this is the most confident man in the world. I needed to show that. But inside, I was as fragile as anybody. I just couldn't let it out. You know, I had to show, at least I thought I had to show confidence and nothing bothers me. Where,
right,
I'm just as bothered as the next guy.
When you have that, and you know the pitch I'm talking about, the slider to a right-hander way outside, and he flails at it, completely opened up, hips opened up. Rolls over on it. He couldn't hit it with a telephone pole. At that moment, when you realize you got fooled, does the world speed up or slow down?
Usually speeds up. But like I said, is it an isolated incident? Because this game, you're going to just do
it. Because it's one of those things. That you
if
see.
It's an isolated incident, it's really not going to shake me. I'm going to be like, geez, what am I thinking? And I get back in the box and he throws me another slider off the plate. Oh, I saw this one and I took it. I'm fine. The only time panic sets in is when I can't stop chasing it. If I can't stop chasing it, I'm in trouble.
Like, we've seen Stanton like that before, where he just isolated, can't lay off the slider.
Right. And if he does it for three pitches, I think about it. I'm like, what's he going to do next at bat? I know, and especially being a DH, he doesn't have the solace of going into the field and taking a hit away from somebody. He's got eight guys in front of him to think about till that next at bat, and you know what's coming again. That slider that you can't lay off. How do you get yourself in the right frame of mind? And probably in about a half hour, you're going to have to hit again. There's nowhere to hide. How are you going to combat that next time? That is the Rubik's Cube of hitting. How do I keep myself in somewhat of a place where I'm just not in a fetal position in the corner sucking my thumb, and I need to find a way to compete at the highest level in about a half hour? Everybody knows I stink. Everybody knows I just chased three sliders off the plate last at bat. That pitcher knows. Whoever's coming into the game knows. The crowd knows. The commentators on TV know. How am I going to stop this emergency right now? And that's where we find, as that comes with experience, as we go on in life, as we go on throughout our career, we learn these little tricks to not let it snowball into doing that again and again and again. I have an emergency place I can go to. It's almost like a golfer.
Right.
That comes up with the shanks. If I come up with the shanks, I'm in trouble.
Sure.
I can't stop shanking. But I always think, what if I'm on tour on Saturday in a major event and I get the shanks? As I'm sure they have a go-to emergency swing that will stop the shanks. They might not score that low, but they can survive to play another day. You know, I think about that often with golfers. And sorry, I keep using the golf analogy, but it's what I love to do, is my hobby. The guys that shoot, okay, I need to shoot 65 today. If my swing's working and everything's on, the great players of the world, they can go out and fire at pins and shoot 65. But what about the days when you don't have it? You know you don't have it. Those great players still have the ability to scrape it around that course and shoot 72. Where the average person, when we have it, we shoot X. When we don't have it, it could be wheels fall off 92 today. The pros have that ability. It's just like a hitter, and it comes with experience. I might not get three hits today, but I've got to find a way to contribute offensively, and I have an emergency hack that I can go to when the wheels are falling off. But you only learn that through experience.
That's amazing. Juan Soto. Had the conversations with the Yankees and part of their exit interviews. And I think what Scott Boras said, we are going to take our time. He is the only aircraft carrier out there, Brett.
Yeah.
Where do you think, if you were him, what would you be looking for? What's important to you? The money's all going to be relative.
If I'm him, where am I comfortable? Do I like the stadium? Where do I want my kids to grow up? I think we talked about this last week. Juan Soto had about as good a year and a walk year as you could possibly have in on the biggest stage in the Bronx, on a great team with great players. The city loves him. What he did in the postseason endeared the fans in the city to him even more than they already were endeared to him. He's in about as good a position as you could be in. The number one free agent, and you're right, the second to him is a little distant second from an offensive perspective. He's saying all the right things. He's 25 years old. He's got his whole life ahead of him. He's got another 10 years in the big league.
He's really played this well.
He's played it unbelievable. I think he's had, you know, I don't know. I don't know Juan Soto. I don't know if he's that astute at such a young age to know exactly what to say, when to say it. He never disrespected New York or New York fans. He always embraced it and said, I love this place. I love my teammates. I love this city. But I've earned the right, according to the rules, by having 6 years of service, that I'm a free agent. And you may never get this again, so I am going to exercise my right. And I think he did it in a professional way where he didn't offend people.
Nope.
But he also didn't give the Yankees an edge. You know, you see a lot of guys in this position, and all they say every day is, hey, I want to be a Yankee for the rest of my life, and this is unbelievable. Does that make the Yankees think, oh, we can get him for a hometown deal? He didn't say that. He said, this year has been remarkable. I love playing here. I love this city. I love this team. But I'll tell you what, I'm going to give the other 29 teams an equal chance. That doesn't exactly give the Yankees a ringing endorsement like we're the favorite.
Oh, yeah.
It's great. It's perfect. It's business 101. I'll guarantee you inside, Juan Soto's thinking, man, I hope those Yankees come through, because I really want to stay here. I just fit here. This city, you're on the biggest.
They've embraced me, but he's not.
You know, year after year, they're going to go for it. Ah, why would you want to play anywhere else than the Yankees with everything being, when you've proven you can handle that big stage and you've thrived on that big stage, why would you want to play anywhere else than the Yankees?
Sure.
Tell me. Well,
and the other part, Brett, is he's not the only aircraft carrier in New York.
Right, but I
but think about this. So if I go,
On the individual. Do you need to be the man everywhere you go, or are you okay sharing the man spotlight?
And I think
as long as Aaron Judge is there, you're never going to be the man. Aaron Judge is the man.
I don't think he's shown that he wants to be.
No,
I'll tell you,
he gets plenty of praise being
right.
Even if he's 1A, does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah,
Judge is one and you're 1A. It's not too bad to be 1A to the greatest offensive player on the planet right now.
Right. Would you rather be an aircraft carrier in Miami, or would you rather be part of an aircraft carrier group, strike force with other big battleships?
Knowing what I know now, absolutely. I want to be on the best team that gives me a best chance to win. And I don't care about anything else because I know how tough it is to win.
How bad do the Yankees need him? Scale 1 to 10.
You don't need him. I mean, he's the perfect fit.
You need him in the World Series next year.
Other people will fit in there.
But he's the only aircraft carrier this offseason.
You don't need him. I don't break the bank for him. There's no way. I don't go paying in the 600s for him.
But Brett, you came that close to winning the World Series.
There's one Ohtani.
And the Dodgers
are going to separate from you. If I'm the Yankees, I see what the market is. If we get into the 600s, I'm out. Now, if we're talking Mike Trout type money, I think the Yankees are all in.
Right.
Or just bettering Mike Trout.
I don't
spend all my money to make sure Juan Soto comes back. He's important, but he's not that important.
So you're the Department of Defense then. You're the Secretary of Defense I'm going to spend all this money on the new four-class carrier, but I'm going to make sure that I've got multiple aircraft carriers. I don't need just
You need to address, I think they need to address other parts of their team other than just Juan Soto. What is Juan Soto? You're going to extend him. You're going to give him 12 years and $500 million, let's say. And sure. I may be way off. It might be less than that.
Just giving away Mr. Steinbrenner's money, but go ahead.
Right. Let's say it's close to $500, just for argument's sake.
Right.
What am I getting? 12 years. I've got Juan Soto. Without a doubt. Top five hitters in the game right now.
Mm-hmm.
Gonna be for a long time. But what am I getting? I'm probably getting six more years of him being an okay right fielder. He's a mediocre right fielder. I'd say below average right fielder defensively. And he's off the charts offensively. He seems everything that I see seems to be a really good guy. Teammates love him.
You're right.
But everybody,
everywhere he's been, they've liked him.
But everybody loves you when you hit 300 and you hit 40 home runs,
right?
And your OPS is off the charts. Everybody loves you. But he's shown that he's an elite.
What I'm saying is,
you're going to be okay in 6-7 years. You've got a Juan Soto that's making 40-50 million a year, and he is a DH. Are you willing to pay that?
I don't care today because. If I don't win today, I don't care about 6 years from now. I only care about today. I got to win today, pal.
He is important to that team. He is not as important to that team as Aaron Judge was a year ago.
Okay. Cause you've got multiple aircraft carriers on there. Right. He's just making you stronger. He doesn't take you over the top. It's kind of like, I think I've told you this. We've had Lee Steinberg on the podcast before. And he told me, you know, if I'm making $150 million, another $1 million might be nice, but it doesn't change my lifestyle. I'm not going to buy another Bentley. I'm not going to buy a bigger house. The difference between.
Well, I think Juan Soto wants to be a Yankee and he's hoping that they play the game. But what he's trying to do is to get all the teams involved that can afford it and just get that price as high as he can. Then he hopes the Yankees come in, match it, and then he can stay in New York. That's what he's hoping for.
And again, I'm waiting to see who turns out to be the haves and the haves nots by their TV money. Yeah. So the Yankees have the YES Network. That's solid. The Mets have SNY. That's solid. The Dodgers have their television. It's not as strong and robust as the Yankees, but they have
There's your three players. And then San Francisco will probably come in. I think San Francisco, from a ballpark standpoint, is not going to be very enticing to Mr. Soto.
Their TV deal is good. But there's a whole bunch of teams out there that don't know what they're doing TV wise. In fact, I've talked to a couple of those ball clubs that are trying to figure out how they're going to recoup TV revenue that they don't have. Bally's is being rebranded. There's only going to be one. I think it's in Atlanta. It's going to be FanDuel Sports Network, and the rest of those teams are going to have to find their own way, like the Padres did.
Yeah, it's funny because I just put out on my dork social media, because I'm not a social media guy, but I put out Brent this Boone, thing.
TikTok star.
I put out this the other day. I put on my story. I said, what's Juan Soto going to get? I just want to know what fans were thinking. Is he going to get 400 plus, 500 plus, 600 plus? And the majority of the votes were for the 600 plus. Because nobody knows. Mets. Nobody knows. Obviously, a year ago, there was Ohtani got the huge money. Yamamoto got the huge money, but then it fell off. And all these big free agents that were expecting big deals didn't get the big deals.
Yeah, but wait a second. All those free agents, we kind of agreed, were flawed. They weren't aircraft carriers.
Well, okay. Right? Who's the lefty in San Francisco? That pitch for the Tampa Bay won a Cy Young.
Oh,
pitch for the Padres won a Cy Young.
Not Snell.
Yeah, Snell. Snell.
We also saw 1 year he was great. Then he regressed. Then he was every other year. That's not an aircraft carrier. That's not Garrett Cole.
If you're coming off a Cy Young, you are an aircraft carrier. If you're coming off, yes, you are.
No, I disagree. You should be. But if you have a history of 1 year up, 1 year down, 1 year up, 1 year down, then it gives me a reason.
No, I agree with you. I agree with you that Ohtani was the proven star a year ago, and he got paid. Yamamoto
was proven star.
No, no, he's not a proven star, Yamamoto.
No, no, I moved on to Aaron Judge, proven star.
Oh, Judge, yes. Yeah, he was Judge. The most important. I think Aaron Judge was the most important factor for his team as anybody out there.
Well, you and I saw the stress on Brian Cashman and your brother's face when they were trying to figure out whether you're staying or not.
He's Aaron Judge. He's he's the captain of the Yankee. He is the Mattingly. He is the Yankee Clipper. He is Jeter. The current version is Aaron Judge.
Real quick, I got two questions for you. Ready? We've talked about this. In fact, folks, the first time I ever met Brett Boone, he blew me off. Hey, Booney, can I get a quick interview for Fox Sports Radio? Yeah, I'll be right there.
Well,
can I get you real quick for a quick interview? I don't have time. Hey, Booney, got a minute? Nope. Just kept walking.
Wow.
Yeah. That's how our relationship began.
That's mean-spirited.
Very mean-spirited. There's a story out of the NBA. NBA player didn't like what a writer wrote about him, because he mentioned his brother who had passed away and his son, and it got a little personal in the column, and he ends up shoving the reporter in the locker room. How heated have you ever gotten with a writer, media member, radio, TV person, where they just did you wrong? If you ever gotten to that point where you're seeing red and I better keep you away?
Never close.
Because you didn't take it personally, or nobody ever got on you?
Oh, people got on me. But never to a point where it was heated and
physical.
Anything close to physical would happen. Never. I don't remember ever one time being close. I remember being pissed at a writer and getting in, not getting in their face, but almost trying to humiliate them in front of their peers. Because you're almost like the Bryce Harper when he says that's a clown. Can't, that's a clown comment.
Clown question, bro.
Clown question, bro. That was my way of handling when I wasn't happy with a reporter, that type of exchange versus confronting you from a physical standpoint. I never, ever in my life, ever for one second got to a point where I lost my cool, where even there was a 1% chance of anything becoming physical.
Because we saw that in the NFL. There was a Dallas Cowboy player that,
you mentioned this article. And I don't know what you're referring to. I haven't read the article, but I never had somebody bring my kids or my family member into it in a personal way. Yeah. Right. My family was always involved from a professional standpoint, but it was always professional what they did on the field.
Never.
So it wasn't personal. When you bring personal family members into it, well, that's a whole different ballgame. That never happened to me.
Interesting. Well, there was a Dallas Cowboy player that was in the locker room after the game, and he came out during the 10-minute cooling off period to confront a reporter because he had tweeted something out. How in the world does he know? How does he get back to you? Am I bad mouthing you on the radio? How does he get back to you?
I don't know.
The clubbies tell you? Does your family tell you?
Hey, Booney, I heard on so and so station today that that's how it happens.
Is that what it is in today's game?
It's your fingertips.
It's everywhere.
You're one of those guys. Just Google your name.
Coming up on the show today, Brett Boone is a bum. We'll take your telephone calls.
Right. I mean, you know, the people have called my mom names when I'm hitting, but you take that with a grain of salt. They're drunk fans or whatever. But no, never in a serious manner have I had a run-in with a reporter because they got personal with me or my family members. But yeah, I definitely thought, hey, you didn't translate our exchange in a fair manner. You took me out of context. That would be when maybe I wasn't happy with a reporter, but I'd handled it, like I said, more of how Harper handled it. Like I'd rather humiliate you in front of your peers right now and make you feel stupid than get into a physical altercation with you.
I've had that a few times and I've stood up for myself. I always measure myself, whether I'm going to stand up for myself or not. If I ask a clown question, I deserve it. I did have the Stanford football coach. I was just on assignment. I had to go to the post game. I asked him an interview and he buried me. He was worse than Bryce Harper burying me. Cause I hadn't been around. I didn't go to every Stanford game. So he buried me. But then I showed up on Monday because I figure if I'm going to take it after the game, I should at least show up Monday. And he actually started his press conference off by apologizing to me.
Yeah. We have moments. I had moments. I wasn't always right. You know, I tried to do good by all the reporters and I had great relationships with the majority of the reporters in my journey. But I definitely had days where I was off and, you know, I usually wouldn't apologize to the group. But if I thought I was a little too sarcastic, I was a little too hard on somebody, I'd probably pull them aside and say, hey, I want to apologize for yesterday. I was in a mood. You caught me at the wrong time. And I said something that kind of embarrassed you that I shouldn't have said. So I would always take it upon myself. If I felt like I stepped over the line and it wasn't rendered by him or his actions or her actions, I would try to rectify that as quick as possible.
Well, you still owe me that interview from the 2000.
I'm sorry, All-Star Rich, game. That I blew you off and I was, you know, no, my ego not. Got in the way.
All right, that's going to do it for Turning 2 for this week. Coming up on the podcast next week, we have
Dave Softy Mahler, who is KJR, been a friend of mine, has been covering
so
me.
So you're going to put on another sports
years.
Talk show host.
I am.
I'm a little jealous, Brett.
I do his show.
A little jealous.
I do his show during the baseball season on Thursdays, and I'm going to have him on. Dave is smart. He's going to give me, and he asked me, he said, can I interview you? I said, you've been interviewing me your whole life. He's like, yeah, but I want to ask you questions on your podcast. He's coming on. And then my son-in-law, Nick Allen, who's
Nicky
married
Knox.
To Sis Savannah, new to the family per se. They got married a year ago. He's a shortstop with the A's.
Yeah, I want to know what it's like to be
I made it important. I didn't say Oakland A's, and I didn't say Sacramento A's. I just said A's shortstop. Las Vegas A's. So,
just what do you like as a father-in-law? Do you think he likes you?
Well, I think he's going to be out next Wednesday or next Thursday. You can listen to the podcast. And
no, I want to know right now, does your son-in-law like you?
Yes, I think we're buddies. I think we have a similar relationship that I have with my son, Jacob, except for Nick is much more respectful.
How do you introduce him?
Nicky Knox, my son-in-law.
No, no. When you're off somewhere and you come up, oh, hey, I want you to meet my, what do you say?
Son-in-law, Nick.
This is my son-in-law, Nick.
Yeah.
I would like a piece of that interview because I'd like to know what it's like having you as a father-in-law. Are you a Budinsky? Do you get involved? Do you?
I try not to. You know, if I find myself getting too involved, I back away. I'm hypersensitive about that.
Okay.
I don't want to overwhelm him. I'll usually go to Savannah and say, hey, you know, I don't know if I should give him a call right now. And when it's baseball related.
No, not baseball related. I trust him. Life.
Oh, I tell him, I said, make Savannah cook for you. Don't take her to dinner every night and get her spoiled.
That is outstanding.
Make her rub your back.
There you go. That's coming up on the podcast. By the way, if you're going to put on Softy, then coming up soon on the Infinity Sports Network, I'm going to have on Matthew Boone.
Okay.
I'm going to put on a Boone. Aaron's on vacation, so I'm going to have Maddie join me.
All right.
And we'll talk trash about both you and your brothers. That's it. We're done. We'll catch you next week here on the Brett Boone Podcast.